Well, hello there, wonderful teachers. I want to invite you to an event we're doing this summer. It's in Cincinnati, Ohio, so you have to be able to make it there, but it might be worth traveling for if you're able to. It's happening on July 20th and 21st, so that's over a weekend, and it's going to be the best 2 days for teachers. We're going to have a ton of fun. We're going to learn a lot about pedagogy and creative teaching and business. We have two fabulous guest speakers, and we're even going to finish with an optional Ceilidh. That's an Irish dancing party. So I hope you'll be able to join me. Just go to vibrantmusicteaching.com/turbo. That's .com/TURBO24. The numbers 24. I hope you'll check it out. View all the details there, and I hope to see you in Cincinnati in July. On with the episode.
Vibrant
music teaching.
Proven and practical
tips,
strategies,
and ideas
for music teachers.
You're listening to the Vibrant Music Teaching Podcast. I'm Nicola Canton, and today we're talking about music neutrality. Lovely teachers, welcome back to the show. Today's episode was originally aired on YouTube. It was part of a YouTube live show that I do, and a lot of the main topics there are really just chats about conversations about particular topics that are on my mind, much like the podcast. So sometimes it makes sense to share them over here too. And this is one of those cases. We're talking about this idea of music neutrality, and I'll explain more within the show. So listen in. Hopefully it'll give you some food for thought. I would love to hear your thoughts on it, on this topic, over on Instagram when you get the chance, or in our community if you're a member. On Instagram, you can find us at Colourful Keys, and of course the community is on our vibrantmusicteaching.com site. I'll see you there. Hello, lovely teachers, and welcome to another Vibrant Music Teacher Chat. This is the weekly YouTube live show where we talk about all things music teaching. Today, we're talking about music neutrality, as I've called it, meaning how do we balance different genres of music in our studio, and what's the right approach when it comes to balancing classical music with other music, and how much of our opinion should come into that. So that's kind of the topic of today, and you can have your own way of addressing this. I'm not saying my way is right, I just have a particular viewpoint, a particular ethos behind my studio on this. But if you have other opinions about different genres, please do add them into the chat. I'd love to hear. Before we get there, though, a couple of bits of news. So next week, we will have a show about the MTB exams, which I've been using and my experience with those. I think it'll be interesting even if you aren't ever considering using an exam syllabus, because it's really a process of preparing a student with a big project, right? That's what we're talking about. But in particular, if you have done exams with students, I think it will be interesting for you to hear about a different syllabus than maybe you've used before. Or if you've used MTB, come along and share your thoughts on it. I'd love to hear those too. So that's next week, and then we'll have a 3-week break because I will be at MTNA. So if you don't know, MTNA stands for Music Teachers National Association, and it is national of the US, that's what that means. So it is a conference that is going to be held in Atlanta this time, and I'm really looking forward to meeting many of you there. The conference is March 17th to 20th, but there's a pre-conference day on the Saturday, so I'll be there for that too. That was actually my favorite day the last time in terms of the actual sessions I attended, although I attended many wonderful sessions across all the days. So yeah, I'm really looking forward to meeting several people there. If you're going to be there, please make sure to add your details to my little MTNA form. It'll be in the description below. And if you just add your email in there, it means I can let you know where the meetup is going to be at MTNA. It's going to be on the Sunday at like what I call cocktail hour, 5 p.m. but you don't need to be drinking cocktails. You can have a coffee or a water or whatever is your bag. But yeah, end of the first day is when we're meeting up, and I particularly chose that day this time because that's also St. Patrick's Day, so I want to celebrate with people, and I thought that would be fun. So that's at MTNA. We also have bingo cards at our stall, and there's a download for them as well. So I hope you'll use those to get to know teachers that you don't know already, especially if you've been going to these kinds of things for a while. You probably have a group that you tend to hang out with. Maybe use our little bingo card to approach different teachers and explore a bit more. Okay, that's all MTNA. If you're not going, don't worry. Maybe you can go sometime in the future. Maybe you can attend a different event. I also have some pretty big news, totally the other side of the world. So as I'm recording this, no one who's watching live is probably going to be there, assuming you sleep at normal hours of the day. But I'm going to be in Melbourne this summer for us, their winter, so in July, to attend the APPC, which is their big conference in Australia. And yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. I was first in Australia 2020, right at the start of 2020, before the pandemic happened. It was wonderful. I loved it. Of course, that was their summertime. This is going to be the winter, so it'll be a bit different. But I can't wait. I'm going to be giving 4 sessions there, so I can't wait for it. Okay, so that is conference news. I'm really looking forward to that. And hopefully, I was hoping for today, but not quite. Hopefully by next week's show, I'll be able to tell you about our own event, which is almost definite, but I can't give the details yet because it's not fully confirmed, which is also in July, later in the July. So hopefully I'll have more news on that next week and you'll be able to come to that one. Okay, so we're going to dive in and talk about music neutrality. So when I talk about music neutrality, let's start with the goal. Here's where I'm coming from with this term and this whole idea. I want to communicate to my students, all music is good music. Let me know if you agree with that, because I know not everyone will. I have a particular example in mind, which was at a Kadai camp. So I'd done a Kadai teacher camp a few times here in the Irish Kadai Institute. It's wonderful. And one of the times I had, oh my gosh, the most fantastic teacher. But there was one thing, not that soured it or anything, one thing I disagreed with him on. He was retired and he just did this camp kind of as a favour to the Kadai Society because he believed in what they were doing. But someone asked him a song, I feel like it was the Beatles. It was something like the Beatles or Queen. It wasn't like they asked him about Justin Bieber, okay? They asked him what he thought of this song. And he basically completely outright dismissed it and said he only cared about classical music, the folk songs that are used in Kadai. He wasn't interested in any popular music styles at all. And I feel like that opinion is pretty prevalent, maybe not so outrightly spoken, but I'm sure many of us have heard things like that from other teachers, maybe teachers we had, or just got that impression that somehow any music that was not classical music, classical in the bigger sense of the word, was lesser, not as high quality, not worth it, right? Or anything that was not classical music was kind of frivolous, something you would do in your off weeks, right? Like if you did exams, then you would do that in the summer. Kind of, it feels like a relegation, a demotion, right? At least to me, that's always been the impression that I've got. And I don't want to give that to my students. Now, I'm not saying that I don't have opinions about music or don't have some things that I don't particularly like. Even some things that maybe I don't think are as high quality. But I don't want to communicate that to my students. I don't want to get it across to them. Even if I think, I don't want to use any particular example, so let's just make up a band, okay? Let's say there's a band called Lime Brigade. I don't know where that's coming from. But anyway, so let's say they love Lime Brigade. I hope there's nothing called that. And I kind of make a little face, or I try to dissuade them from learning that song. I'm saying that their opinions aren't right, or that we're in different worlds. And I don't think that's the right way to bridge a musical gap with my student. Maybe they've never heard much classical music and they need time to get to know that. There's a reason they like Lime Brigade, and it's because it makes sense to them based on their musical palette, which maybe we think is too limited in some way. But telling them that, or telling them that it's lesser and they need to listen to Mozart every day, until they find that more interesting than Lion Brigade. Where is that going to get us? For most students, it's just going to mean they're disengaged from lessons, they might even quit. But it also says to them, your music doesn't count. Your music isn't good enough. Your music doesn't belong here. And a lot of students get that impression, and I think it's a wrong one for us to give across. If we invalidate their music, many will just shut down to our suggestions and our input. I love this phrase, it's not about music, but I love the phrase, don't yuck someone's yum. Like, if someone loves to have, I don't know, what is it they usually mix with popcorn? Some people like sweets in their popcorn, like M&M's mixed in with their popcorn. Not my thing, right? But I don't, like, turn my nose up at it. That's really rude. And I feel like that's what a lot of the classical music world does to people who like pop music. And I do like pop music. And I also like classical music. And I like many different genres. There are some that I don't like. But even if my student likes those genres, I'm not going to really communicate that to them. I might let them know that I'm less familiar with it. But I want them to know that I don't think it's lesser. It just might not be what I love, right? But that's not because it's lower quality. And I think little things we say and little expressions can get that across to them. So here's how I think we get this music neutrality thing across to our students, if this is a goal for you like it is for me. First of all, a big part of this for us is giving lists of choices to my students when they're coming to select music. So generally in the beginning, my students are not selecting a lot of their own music, but at the first opportunity, usually when they're like in their second year of study, something like that, they'll start to have a bit of choice. And as much as possible within the level that they're at, I give them choices that span genres. And by the same token of not looking down on pop, but I make sure to include classical options in there, no matter who they are. If they're an adult beginner, if they're a teenager who has told me they like EDM, doesn't matter, I'll still give them that option. So I'll have a list of books, one's classical, one's like film music sounding, one's popular styles, one's rock. As much as possible, I'll give them quite a few wide-ranging genres, because those are all equal choices, and no matter which one they choose, I will be happy with their choice, right? Because it's all going to be quality music. I'm not going to share something with them that is not pianistic or is not possible for them to play, right? So those lists communicate a lot, I think, to my students. I also regularly ask them for requests, and it's important that that's regular. A lot of students need many opportunities to tell you what they want to learn, because the first few times you ask them, they might be embarrassed to say, they might not have thought about it, so they just like need some time to process. It's like whenever anyone asks you like, oh, what's your three favorite films? Unless you have a prepared answer to that question, it takes a bit of time. And it's also a bit stressful for many of us to come up with three favorites, because we feel like it has to be my most favorite, like that's what the word means, of all time. And they're going to judge me based on this. So try to use some of your favorite songs right now, or three of your favorite songs rather than your three favorites, so that it doesn't sound like the top. That's just a little tweak. But the first few times, maybe the first few years, your student may not give you an answer to that question. They may say, oh, I don't know, anything's fine, or shrug, look like not engaged. And then as they start to see these lists from us and start to see the options out there and start to see maybe what other kids are playing at recitals, they realize, hey, I can suggest Lion Brigade here. This is a safe space for me to do that. And if they do, then you go away, you do your homework, and you listen to the music, and you see if there's going to be a good option. You look for arrangements, maybe it's something you're going to learn by ear, or maybe it's impossible to learn on the piano, and you can just be honest with them, that's fine. But most of the time, if I don't know a song that a student suggests, I do tend to know a lot of it, and it's because a lot of them suggest really old music rather than current music. It's like Taylor Swift, or it's 20 plus years old. And that, I can do all of that, so that's fine. But if I don't know it, I say, okay, cool, I've never heard of that, or I don't think I know that one, I'll look it up. Now, quick note here, because I think this is a cultural difference we need to just be aware of, and someone may ask it at some stage during this chat, which is about the appropriateness of the lyrics. I live in a culture which is quite open about a lot of things and where swearing is pretty accepted. And in other parts of the world that are more conservative or just speak in a different way, I realize that that may be a lot more offensive. So I'm not saying that I let little kids learn songs that have swear words in them. What I'm saying is parents normally won't be as sensitive to that. And so I do think we need some cultural awareness of what is what we're comfortable with and what generally parents in our studio are comfortable with to start with. Now, with a younger kid, I've never had them suggest anything that would be mildly inappropriate because their parent is normally deciding what they listen to for the most part. Maybe it came from the radio or maybe they have playlists that they listen to together. So I've never had anything like that. With a teenager, I will usually, if they make a suggestion, I'll look it up right away on Spotify. If there is no version without the E for explicit beside it, I'll tell them, okay, I can't actually listen to it, but I'm going to consider it and I'll see if there's a good arrangement. If the arrangement then has no lyrics on it, most parents here would be fine with that, right? Because they're already letting their child listen to that music. So that's a lot that you need to unpack on your own, but I just wanted to put that caveat out there that lyrics may be an issue, they may not. You need to kind of see where you land on that and what makes sense for the community that you serve. Simple suggestions, give them lists of music that span genres, make sure to keep asking for requests and don't react a funny way. Be careful of your reaction when they do. And what's the result of that? Well, often students will pick things that surprise you, right? Has anyone been surprised by what a student chose? I think if we picked for them, especially if within for a couple of years of knowing a student, if we had like a teen beginner, a lot of the advice out there, maybe even things I say myself, are like, oh, they'll like pop style music or maybe try new age kind of stuff. Great, try it, give them the option, but also give them the other option. And don't indicate to them in any way that this is the music that teens like and this is the music that is an option, but you're not sure if they like. Just give them no opinion on it because they often will surprise you. I've had a really good example of this recently, and where this idea for doing this show came from was I had one of the teachers here and we were in a teacher meeting. She shared with me the music that her student had picked. So she had taken over several books in this case and played little bits for her student of the different books. Student picked Masterwork Classics, which is a classical music anthology. Student is a 16-year-old, right? And they were offered pop music and rock styles and new age and jazz. And they have previously learned like different, mostly sort of modern styles. But you give them an open choice and maybe the classical is what they want. Even if they're a teen beginner, even if they're a little kid, even if they're an adult, it doesn't matter who they are. If we give them the choices with an open mind, they can make the selection they want. And then we can start to nudge them to try different things. But I think giving them that choice and that freedom allows them to feel comfortable to try many different things. So those are my thoughts, but let me know yours. Music neutrality, where do you stand on it? How do you communicate it to students? So a few comments to catch up with, and then if you have any questions, I'll answer those before we wrap up. Teresa on the music neutrality, I agree, music genres are all valid, yet I'm upfront about the genres I'm not as familiar with, yes, or as efficient to teach. Yeah, look, I think it's about openness, both openness in like open to different genres, but also open as in honesty, right? I don't know much about rap and R&B. Now, that doesn't mean with rap it can be tough, but sometimes there's a riff we can learn, so I'm open to it, right? And I will listen to it. I will take what we can from it if that's their passion. Oh, Trinity has released some gaming arrangements. Interesting. If they're into, okay, you mentioned Minecraft, look up, go to musicnotes.com, Rose, and look up Chrissy Ricker video game or Chrissy Ricker Minecraft. Someone can maybe type that in the chat for me if you know Chrissy Ricker's name, because she has some great arrangements. I'm currently doing the Super Mario Bros. One, with a student of mine, it's the best thing. It's the best thing. This is a non-practicing student who has a lot going on in his life, but he loves playing that and working it out together. So really fun and great to have arrangements from a composer who knows what they're doing. I can make it playable. Juliet says, quite agree. As a classroom teacher, I felt it was partly my job to introduce lots of different styles of music and not show any preferences I may have. Yeah, absolutely. And Serena shared, I definitely found that, as in like the bias against anything that isn't classical, with some lecturers in college not ranking pop music as highly as classical music. Yeah, I mean, you definitely can figure it out by ear. I feel like for us as teachers, maybe it's more comfortable to have the arrangement. This particular student, we're more referring to the patterns generally on the page rather than reading it note by note. Like, it is kind of, we're half doing it by rote, but that's what works for him. Yeah, look it up, Chrissy Ricker. I believe she has Minecraft as well. That's why I mentioned it. And then something else, but they're all like the older school type of games. Anyway, look her up. Great music. Look up Chrissy Ricker's music in general. I mean, the stuff that isn't arrangements is also great.
One of the awesome benefits for Vibrant Music Teaching members is that they get an exclusive member magazine every month. This magazine brings together our blog articles in a way that is digestible and super actionable. If you want to become a member and get the magazine as well as all the other benefits, you can go to vmt.ninja to sign up.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Vibrant Music Teaching Podcast. I hope you loved it, and I wanted to pop on here one more time to remind you about our event. It's happening in Cincinnati this July, and you can get all the details at vibrantmusicteaching.com/turbo. See you there.